PACTSINC, and PAX Inc. is a black advocacy organization aimed at developing the black community to its maximum potential through a focus on education and economics with the traits of hard work, honesty, and integrity. And once again, for more information, make sure you visit www.pactsinc.org. Also, while you're online, make sure you visit our Freedom Train website at www.freedomtrainradio.com, and you can listen to the playbacks of your favorite shows, learn more about your favorite podcast guests in the world, and also learn more about your favorite guests that we've interviewed in the past. I just felt like doing that because I was in the mood, you know. But also follow us on Twitter and Instagram. Twitter, follow us at Freedom Train Net. Instagram at Freedom Train Network. Like our Freedom Train Facebook page. And last but not least, make sure you subscribe to the Freedom Train on either Android. If you Android, get subscribe on Google Play Music. If you iPhone, subscribe on iTunes. That way you can get the episodes come directly to your phone and you can be live and in charge. Really going down in the South, ain't it, Pat?
Word to your mother.
There it is. Word, now you gotta say word to mother.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You know what I'm saying? You gotta get it, B. You gotta say mother, B.
Why?
Yeah. There it is. Man, what's good? It's raining. It's raining like a mug over down here in Tallahassee. What it look like up there?
Nah, man, it's sunny. We had our rain already. We over that.
Yeah.
God is done crying over Charlotte.
Well, I guess God, little sister, crying over here or something. Cause it's going down.
Who is God, going little sister? Now that you say that, I'm going to be thinking about it all night.
Keisha.
Got a little sister? Keisha.
Keisha. Yeah, you ain't know Keisha was an old ancient something name, did you?
Nah, I didn't.
Hey,
that's
ancient. See, you thought it was some 1990s something. Nah, it go back.
I did. You know what? I knew it was before the 90s because I know some 50-year-olds named Keisha. Not a lot of them, but I do know one. So I knew it was older, but I didn't know it went back thousands of years.
So you think Keisha was the new Gertrude? Because you think Gertrude was a popular name back in the day, so you think Keisha like replaced Gertrude in popularity?
Yeah, because like, you know when all like the Mays, like Annie Mae, Louis Mae,
yeah, Susan Mae, Jesse Mae, Willie Mae, Sally Mae.
See, you know when our kids grow up, all of the old people gonna be named Keisha.
Or Taekwondo, or Talisha, or Ty something, or Love something, or Faye something.
If the Maze is gonna come back in style, then, and they all of the, cause you know all of the Keisha grandkids gonna be nice.
You can
like
do Keisha May. If you Keisha May, man, come on, you gotta mix the old school with the new school. Keisha May,
you can't
that'd
do
be
Keisha
so.
May. Nah, that's black.
Why not?
That's
what you mean?
Nah, you if you ever, cause you ain't look, bruh. Nah, I don't even think that's allowed in existence. Have you ever met a Keisha May?
But see, that's the uniqueness of you. You've never met a lot of these names until you met them.
Nah, but see that it's a reason why you ain't never met a Keisha May. Cause the moment any parent decide to name their kid that, everybody just disappears.
Hey, man, look, just sometimes you got to step out on a
it's
ledge.
It's not allowed in this time stream, Joe, is what I'm saying.
You got to step out on a ledge sometimes and live life to the fullest and name your child Keisha May.
No, you can either be Keisha something or something Keisha, or you could be May. You can't be
Keisha May Lachey.
You can't be Keisha May. Keisha May, no. Well, you know what? That might be permitted. Keisha May Lachey, but only because it rhymes.
Well, that's her Facebook name.
Oh.
Remember? Because that's...
Well,
no,
because by the time Keisha May Lachey is permissible, we won't be doing Facebook no more. Facebook will be the way of MySpace. You remember when they kept saying Facebook was going to go the way of MySpace and that never happened?
Which way did MySpace go?
Exactly.
I don't know. I don't think I used MySpace right. So, if
MySpace
I saw the picture,
still around though.
I know. If you own MySpace, what that mean about your life or your career?
I think MySpace is mostly like a music platform now. So.
Okay. That's what I was thinking. You probably doing music or something.
But you know, I'm still on Black Planet. So, hey man, what's
yeah.
the topics? We just rambling. What we doing?
I know you talking about you went into Black Planet. Hey, before we get to our topics, though, I do want to let people know that September 4th, I will be releasing my second book in my On the Shoulders of Giants book series. So, On the Shoulders of Giants Volume 2, Central America, will be available September 4th on my websites, both www.ontheshoulders.com as well as www.ontheshoulders.org. The Kindle version will be available on Amazon.com. Audiobook will be available on Audible.com. And the workbook would be coming soon, so it's really going down in the south over here. And I have my book trailer is out, is on Facebook. You can go to my Own Shoulders of Giants Facebook page to see my book trailer. You can go to my Own Shoulders of Giants YouTube channel. Matter of fact, make sure you subscribe to my YouTube channel and like my Facebook page. And you know, so that way you could be in the loop. If you really, 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 really want to be in the loop, you can text OTSOG. 222828, and that way you can join my mailing list. And you can be all the way down. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. I just had to get that plug real quick. Oh yeah, and Patrick gonna be stripping that Golden Corral later on today. So make sure y'all go over there and check him out.
Bro. I got a stomach. I got a stomach virus.
Ah man, Jordan ain't letting no virus stop him.
Yeah, but Jordan ain't had the pressure stripping that Golden Corral. It's a lot more intense than a simple playoff game.
Don't let the mashed potatoes intimidate you. Don't let the steam coming up from them food intimidate you, man. Don't do that.
I can't.
I guess anywho, get into our topic. So today we want to talk about, you know, two main things, and then we want to be able to structure everything else around it. Colin Kaepernick, to boycott or not to boycott? That is the question. Bill Maher. And his use of the N-word, Bill Maher called himself a house nigga. So what do we think about that? Also, within these two situations or surrounding these two situations, we're going to analyze the way we react and also come up with solutions, strategies, and tactics on different ways that we can not necessarily react, but move and make better decisions and do better things when stuff like this happens. So let's start with Bill Maher. Let's go ahead and get that one out of the way. Then we can go ahead and crack down on this Colin Kaepernick thing. So for those who don't know, on the Bill Maher show week before, last week on the Bill Maher show, he was in a conversation with the white guy, and the white guy was saying, yeah, Bill, you know, we got to get out in the field, we got to go out and work in the fields, you know, we have to be out there with the people. And Bill Maher said, work in the field? No, I'm a house nigga. And so everybody got mad about that. When I first heard it, I was looking at it, and I was saying, the first thing that came to my mind is, he called himself a sellout black person. Am I really mad about that? No, I'm not really mad about him calling himself a house nigga. I understand why others would be mad, but I'm not really mad at him calling himself a house nigga. But at the same time, we should never allow somebody like Bill Maher to get too comfortable to be able to think that he can say things like that at, you know, anyway. But also, I think in a lot of times in the way that we react, we have to remember that we can't go and be saying, hey, well, that person shouldn't be able to say this and that person shouldn't be able to say that, and then come back around on our end and say, well, we have the right to free speech. I mean, they got the right to free speech, but it's a way that we handle certain things, because certain groups, you can't say certain things about certain groups because they'll shut that shit down. So we need to get to that point to where we organize enough where people will be afraid to say things about us or say things that will offend us, and or most of us, or the majority of us, or even a small section of us. Because me personally, I wasn't necessarily offended. I mean, I ain't no real Bill Maher fan in the first place, but, you know. Yeah, okay. What about you, Pat?
I mean, I'm for the most part in that same boat right there with you. Not about the sellout black person. I mean, the first thing I thought of when I heard him say it was okay, to be honest. I mean, that was my thought. Okay, you know, like, what next? Because for me, he was calling himself a nigga. Like, I'm not, like, why would I be mad at a white person for calling themselves a nigga? And that's where it went for me. Like, he's talking about himself. He's not talking about other black people, the black community, or anything like that. He chose to call himself a nigga. And so I was kind of like, all right, well, if he want to be a nigga, that's fine with me. Like, I don't have no beef with that. Now, at the same time, I understand, like you said, why it would be a big deal, why people would feel some type of way about him saying it, especially the comfortability that he exhibited while saying it. You know, I get all that, but at the end of the day, for me, it's just, well, let's break that down, the comfortability portion of it. Okay, so let's be real, right? We have entertainers, black culture, black music, hip-hop, and R&B is a dominant piece of pop music nowadays. And it's really, really hard to find a pop artist, especially a hip-hop pop artist, that is making songs that don't have the word nigga sprinkled throughout them. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's kind of hard. It's like going to, you know, a black person's house for dinner and not having no salt on the food. It ain't going to happen. So if that's the case, I'm pretty positive, especially when they do their shows and their concerts and everything like that, they got a sea of white people standing in front of them screaming out nigga. I'm pretty comfortable just if a white person listens to music. They are very comfortable saying nigga. Very, very, very. They might not be comfortable saying it around black people, but they're comfortable saying it. And, like, we got to come to grips with that. Everybody's kind of on him about how comfortable he was saying the word. Let's be real. If you're an American and you're not comfortable saying nigga, then you're probably absent from modern pop culture. So anybody that partakes, especially in rap music, is going to be exceedingly comfortable with saying the word nigga. And Bill Maher has rappers on his show all the time. I'm pretty sure he listens to a lot of rap music. That doesn't excuse it, but it, you know, just giving a reason why, a potential reason why, so many people, white people especially, are comfortable saying the word. But beyond that, if the man want to call himself a nigga, look, I don't have time or energy to be mad at you because you want to call yourself something silly. Like you can call yourself whatever you want. Right.
I just think we got better shit to be mad about than be mad that goddamn Bill Maher called himself a nigga. Like, okay, cool.
Right, right. We like that to me. That's not worthy of black rage. Somebody calling themselves a nigga, white, black, blue, brown, purple, or otherwise, is not worthy, in my opinion, of black rage.
Well, see, and then another thing, Ice Cube came on the show calling himself, you know, checking Bill Maher, setting his record straight. And he was like, that's our word. That's our, no, Cube, for that's not our word. We're not fighting to have that word. Like, you missing that. We're not fighting to have that word. We don't want that word. What we're saying to white people is, we, the black people, well, what we should be saying is, black people are socially engineered to say that word. So that's why you still have black people doing it. You conditioned us for 400 years to say that. So to just get it out of our system just that easy, it's not going to happen. So black people are conditioned to say that. Then you have those who take the extra steps to work against the conditioning to stop saying that. And that's what we need more. But what we are telling white people is, and what we're telling white people and what we're telling Bill Maher are two different things. We're telling white people that you cannot call us niggas. Y'all saying, y'all telling Bill Maher that he can't say the word nigga at all. I ain't saying that. I'm telling white people, you can't call me or no other black person nigga. Now, if you want to go call a dog, a cat, a tree, or whatever you want, or yourself a nigga, that's on you. Because first of all, the idea, the mind, the concepts, and the culture, everything that came to create a nigga started with white people. First niggas was white people anyway. And they, because they were in power over black people, they were able to create that type of person out of a black person. Because niggas ain't by accident, let's just be real. So we're not fighting for that word, Ice Cube, or anybody else. We're not fighting for, that's not our word. What we're telling you is, you call us that word, and you might get your ass whooped. That's what we're saying.
And I agree with that, and I think that's a great point, the fact that, you know, and Bill Maher has done this before, and other people have done this before, and the message has always been, you know, like, even in the news, you know, we've seen this ongoing debate, not just in the news, but in plenty of public spheres and talking spaces, where, you know, people are just talking, relatively speaking or generally speaking, about maybe history or whatever. And there was this debate not too long ago about whether it was okay to say nigger in those situations versus saying the N-word. And almost every black person I knew was like, look, I don't care if you say nigger. Just don't call me one. Or don't yeah. call any black person one. But so you know, like, that's a great point, but I don't know, like, to me, nigga has always been a white word. That's always been the white white person's
yeah.
word.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to sit here and claim a word that was used to demean me and disrespect me for 400 years. For 500, 600 years, why would I claim that word is my word? Now, I don't want that word. I don't want the history that comes with it. I don't, like, that's almost like embracing the disrespect, and this is just my opinion, but that's almost embracing the disrespect that word carried for your ancestors. And I know some people would say, well, let's take the word and flip it and make it a positive. You know, like,
yeah.
I think there are better sources of our energy than that. Like, there are better things we could be doing with our time than that.
And see, I don't agree with that. Hey, we're going to flip this word and make it more positive. We're going to take the sting out. We don't need the word.
Right.
Remember, we say it because of social conditioning. And those of us who understand the social conditioning, because you understand that, you're not going to waste your time getting mad at black people who say niggas, because whether you like it or not, they're going to keep saying it because of social conditioning. Because of social conditioning, social engineering. That's why we say it. And that's why, until we get to a point where you have a good number of black people who are working toward not saying the word, you're still going to have people saying it. We have people growing up with those mindsets, real niggas and all that. It's not going to change. Trying to take the sting out of words like nigga and bitch to me are a waste of time. Like that, but that just shows you that to me that's the classic sign of a person in an oppressed state. Because you'll never hear a person in the position of power trying to take the sting out of a word. They're either going to use it or they ain't.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's a waste of energy. It's a tremendous waste of energy. We could be doing so many other more important, more impactful things than trying to make niggas something positive. It doesn't matter. And to me, you know, I'm at the point, it doesn't even matter what it started off as. You know, it doesn't, like, because you get into all these discussions about niggas, niggas, you know what I'm saying? You get into negro, negra, you get into all these different discussions about where the word comes from. Look, I understand from a historical standpoint the historical value and significance of knowing the origin of a word. I get that. But does it change the history of that word as it plays out for us in America? No, it doesn't. So all of those discussions are purely historical for me. They carry no real social impact in terms of how I feel about the word. And I'm always going to say me, because I know everybody feels differently about the word. You got a lot of people that follow the Eddie Griffin school of thought, who, you know, he, like Chris Rock, says there are a bunch of different types of black people. Nigga is one of them. And there are a large group of people that are proud to be niggas. To me, I go back to what you said earlier about social conditioning. That's social conditioning at its finest. If you ask me, even if going back to hip-hop records, social conditioning at its finest. You know, it's become the thing to be a nigger. Where if you go back 30 or 40 years, it, you know, like, that shit ain't never cool. But to an extent, being able to label other black people as niggers has always been part of a power play for the black elite. So,
right.
You know, we come into all these different discussions about nigga, but at the end of the day, the impact has always been not that somebody said nigga, but that somebody called somebody else a nigga. And if Bill Maher wants to call himself a nigga, if white people want to start calling themselves niggas, I don't have a problem with that. Personally, I can't get mad at you for calling yourself a nigga.
I don't understand it, because, like, you know, I mean, you know, you get caught up scrolling sometimes, you get caught up in the videos, you come across a video, you see the white boys, come on, nigga, and they calling each other niggas. I'd be confused about that, like, why y'all, okay, whatever, y'all stupid. Like, I'm confused, I'm not mad about that, I'm confused about that, you know. I'm confused about white people going out of their way to try to emulate being niggas. I'm confused about that.
That's the social conditioning that you talked about earlier, though, Joe. Remember how popular... And see, this is one of the reasons why the dominant society, especially white society, has traditionally railed against black music as hard as it did. When rock and roll first started to become prevalent with black rock and roll acts and all this other stuff, there were literally congressmen that were standing up saying, if you let your children listen to this jigaboo rap and or this jigaboo rock with all these black people gyrating and all of this, they're going to become miscreants and deviants and all of this other stuff. They will become homosexual. Some of them even actually said that. So, you know, like that, they recognize that their children being exposed to this culture will have a direct impact on their children's behaviors and how their children identified, and they didn't want that. Nowadays, they fought that same battle with pop music, or they fought that same battle with hip-hop music, rap, and they continue to fight that battle to this day because they understand that when you're constantly listening to music that's glorifying a certain lifestyle and that's identifying certain things and certain peoples and certain behaviors as being real, being admirable, being this, being that, and then they put that word on it, nigga, you know what I'm saying? That's what it becomes, even if it's just common to identify other people as that. When you listen to that for so long, you know, it becomes a part of you. It becomes a part of your self-expression. And that's what you're seeing when you see white people, little teenage white boys, talking about nigga this, nigga that. I was walking back home with my kids today, and there was a white boy standing at the bus stop with his pants down to his kneecaps and a shirt that was 8 sizes too big on the phone. And he was just ranting off nigga, 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 nigga. I know exactly where that come from.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I get it, but I'm still confused because it's like, yeah, y'all work hard to be this, but whatever. I mean, like I say, our main focus shouldn't be on white people saying the word, because hell, white people been saying the word. But you know, making sure nobody disrespects us, and making sure that we work to stop saying the word ourselves. Those should be our main focus. And outside of that, our focus should be on organizing and building our communities rather than worrying about Bill Maher. And then, you know, because you got like people like Killer Mike. Man, I ain't trying to throw no shade at Killer Mike. I'm just saying we should pump the brakes and take our time and like feel Killer Mike out all the way before they deem him like a leader.
So, I don't, you know. I'm detached, so I don't know what's going on with Killer Mike.
Because he was saying, I guess, you know, Bill Maher's supposed to be his friend. So first, I didn't see all of it, but first, some of the headlines were saying that Killer Mike came to his defense and saying, you know, I guess I didn't see all of it, but I guess he was saying what he did wasn't that bad or something. I don't know. And then he said, if he was somewhere with Bill Maher, he'd punch him in the stomach and have a beer with him. I mean, I wouldn't do that. I just look at him like he's stupid. Like, you know what a house nigga is, though, right? Like, you know that's a sellout. Let me say this too, and not all black people who were in the house were sellouts. Let me clarify that too, because you know you have the house Negro and the field Negro concept, and so if you have that house Negro concept of yes, master, I'm with you, master, those types of master. If you got that type of mindset, then yes, you the sellout black they were talking about. But let me clarify this, because there was a lot of black women who worked in the house against their will, who a lot of bad stuff happened to while they worked in those houses, but they also were on the side of liberation. So let me just get that cleared up before somebody listen to this and try to get mad and whatever, whatever. We talking about the ones who worked against the best interests of the black people. That's who we talking about.
Well, you're more specifically, you're focusing on Malcolm X's narrative of the house nigga versus the field nigga.
Right.
That's a very popular narrative that most black people that I've talked to, matter of fact, I go so far as to say every black person I've talked to, although I'm not going to say every black person, period, is very familiar with Malcolm X's very short, I think it's only like 10 minutes, a 10-minute part of a speech, I forget which speech, where he outlines field nigga mentality and house nigga mentality. And so, under the umbrella of that speech, you get a different ideology of house nigger versus field nigger from the historical perspective. The historical perspective is, you know, light skinned blacks were deemed closer to white, so they worked in the house. Dark skinned blacks weren't, so they were in the field. The Malcolm X ideology of it, which he was just simply using that to make a point, was that, you know, the house niggas was closer to the whites. They felt, you know, they felt the companionship to the whites, and they felt extremely attached to the whites to the point where they saw themselves as white, more white than black. And so, you know what I'm saying? That's where we go from there. But I don't know I don't know about coming to Bill Maher's defense, because I think we got better things to do than that as well. I mean, he said what he said. Bill Maher ain't going to feel bad about it. He ain't going to lose no viewers over it or nothing like that. So the black people that watch Bill Maher, they not shocked by it. They're going to keep watching it. They not worried about it. The black people that don't watch Bill Maher are going to be screaming for boycotts, this, that, and the thirds. And they not going to. So it ain't, one way or another, it's not going to affect Bill Maher. So I'm not going to come to his defense like a Killer Mike. If I was Killer Mike, I'd have kept my damn mouth closed.
Well, you know, a lot of people were asking HBO to fire. You know, they were calling for HBO to fire him. But it's like, think about the stuff HBO shows on a regular basis. Yeah. Why would they fire him for calling himself a house nigga?
No. And he knew perfectly well what the backlash could be when he said it. And again, Bill Maher has done little things. He's made stunts like this before, but I don't know. It's interesting to me because on the one hand, I will say Bill Maher is one of the few platforms that we as a people have, and I know this might catch some backlash, but let's just be real. It's one of the few platforms that we as a people have where we can speak openly and honestly about our issues on a platform that large. Bill Maher has had Mos Def on his show saying some pretty interesting things. He's had Cornel West on his show saying some pretty interesting things. He's had Flat Earthers on his show and all kinds of other things. So, you know, it's one of those platforms. Now, and I say that to say, if it's one of those platforms where people can literally get on the show and say virtually anything they want, why would HBO fire him for saying nigga? And more importantly, for calling himself a nigga. Like, let's keep going
and
back to that.
And then follow that up with a Quentin Tarantino movie.
Right. Right. Django or something like that, which everybody want to pretend is okay because it's historically whatever when it ain't historically nothing.
But we got to learn how to be more emotionally mature, and we're not doing that. We're not getting better with our emotions. I mean, God damn, like, you can't get mad every time somebody say something.
No, I mean, you got to measure it. Like I was explaining being offended to my kids earlier today, actually. And I remember growing up, like, I was taught you're offended when you feel like somebody did something to hurt or insult you on purpose.
Right.
You don't get offended just because somebody does something. The intent, the way I was raised, the intent has to be there to hurt you. Absent of the intent, they might have made a fucked up statement, but I'm not offended.
You don't got to get offended.
Right. But nowadays, and this is a conversation we was having earlier this weekend, people get offended so quickly. Like, they get offended just because you said something that they don't agree with. Now they're offended. That's emotionally immature, like you said.
I mean, me not agreeing with what you say and me being offended by what you say is two different things. And people have to understand that. Like, I don't have to be mad because you said, oh, if somebody say, oh, all black people can't read and they lazy, I mean, I know I went to college, so I mean, I live in the college town, so I know that's not true. So will I get angry because they said that? No.
I mean, I'm in that same boat, though. And that's something my mama used to tell me all the time. Because as a child, I would get offended when people would talk about my mom and get in fight.
Uh-huh.
Come home, and she'd be like, why'd you fight? Because he says you was blah, blah, blah. And she, very first thing out of her mouth, well, am I? No, ma'am. So what you mad for? I know most people have had some sort of conversation to that extent with somebody in their life. But for me, it really sunk in that, look, if the situation ain't true, and because that's the other side of it. If they're just trying to get you mad, you know what I'm saying? That's the other side. Like, you still, like, for me, a very specific set of circumstances has to occur for me to get offended. And Bill Maher calling himself a nigga does not meet the criteria. Now, again, that's just for me, but I do think we as a people, I mean, let's think about this. We get mad at a white man for calling himself a nigga. Like, that doesn't even compute to me. Like, I've asked people to explain it. They can't even explain it good. He just shouldn't say it, that's all.
Yeah, and you shouldn't say it either, but you say it. You shouldn't call, like, you shouldn't go up to other girls and call them bitches when you get mad, but you do that. Like, think about the stuff that you say that's, think about the stuff that you say and you do that's more damaging to your community. Think about the things that you turn a blind eye to in your community that's more damaging than this shit. You mad at him, but you let Nuck and all them get away with the bullshit that they get away with. You let Pastor, whoever, get away with the shit. That, come on, black people. We got to stop giving our energy to the bull.
And then you send your kid to a goddamn Young Thug or even a goddamn Kendrick Lamar J. Cole concert where they surrounded by a sea of white people saying nigga every time the moment come up in the song.
Man, I seen the video earlier at his high school. It seemed like they had like this little dance competition or whatever. And they had that Future, that Miley Percocet song. That's the song that they was playing at the school, and it looked like a little pet rally where they had people dancing to. Just, and I'm like, man, well, if y'all playing music like this, why y'all mad at people for saying nigga? Like, you not mad at, like, you like, Buddy got songs encouraging your kids to do drugs.
But, you know, all we thinking about, and I really do think it boils down to somebody told somebody to be mad, and they got mad, and then they told somebody else to be mad, and they got mad, and then they told, like, because when you, like, that's not to insult everybody that's mad, because I honestly feel like some people honestly do have a well-thought-out reason for why they mad. All I'm saying is everybody I asked why they mad didn't, which means there is a segment of people out there that are mad just because somebody basically told them to be mad. That's a waste of energy as well. Like, come on now. Like, you can't let people dictate your emotions like that. And I really want somebody to explain to me why I should be mad at a white person for calling themselves a nigger.
Well, it was another black lady on the show that was trying to basically give him the more historical history around with the
as
house
if
nigger.
As if he don't know it.
I mean, hey, trust me, hey. Hey. But, I mean, yeah, whatever, Bill Maher.
Yeah, like, you can't, black people, like, I don't know. I feel like, in some instances, but that's a whole nother discussion on strategy. But, I got better things to do than be mad at Bill Maher for calling himself a nigga.
I just don't think that we have to react the same way every time somebody says something that you may perceive as offensive. I mean, even if you don't like what the person said, and even if you are offended by what the person said, digest it, be mad, get over it, and then think before you react. Think before you post. Think before you say something. Think, like, really, really analyze what's going on. We got to stop wasting energy and giving energy to things that don't need it. Like, it's a waste of time.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is. But, well, I guess we didn't talk this Bill Maher thing to death, so.
Yeah, so, all right, so off of Bill, on to the NFL. So, Colin Kaepernick, you know, after he took a knee, he was taking his knee in protest of the violence in the black community, police violence.
No, he wasn't taking his knee. You got to tell the whole story. He didn't start out taking the knee.
Oh, yeah, okay, yeah. Well, and, you know, we talked about this in previous shows, but...
Well, we can just say he was protesting.
Yeah, the first thing he did, and in protest of police brutality and police violence, the first thing he did was he sat during the national anthem. Like, he sat on his butt. He sat all the way down. And then after that, he met with some white dude that was in the army, and then he softened his stance and took a knee. And from then on, he took a knee, and other players either took knees or threw their black power fist up in the air. Colin Kaepernick got cut from the 49ers. He don't have a job no more. And now he can't find a job, and he's being blackballed. And let me say this. I just want to make this clear. It's not because he's not good enough, because if you go look at the stats and you look at the situation he was in and all the stats that he put up, Colin Kaepernick had a good season last year. He wasn't great, but Colin Kaepernick had a good season last year. So he's not getting signed because he's not good, because if you look at the other quarterbacks who are getting signed, they can't hold a candle to have the things that Kaepernick has done. Now, the latest thing that kind of pushed people overboard to want to boycott the NFL is Colin Kaepernick going to visit with the Seattle Seahawks, having a great workout with the Seahawks, and then the coach Pete Carroll saying that Colin Kaepernick was too good to be a backup in the NFL, and he didn't want to sign him as a backup, so he didn't sign him, and he signed some garbage-ass white boy as a backup. And so that got people all up in arms, and now Boyce Watkins and other people are saying that they want to boycott the NFL. But my first question when it comes to the boycotting of the NFL is, how is that going to, what kind of outcome or effect is that going to have on the league? Like, how is that going to make things change? Is that going to make them stop being racist? Is that just going to get Colin Kaepernick signed? Or will you have 10,000 black people who say, no, I'm not going to watch? Well, first of all, of those who boycott the NFL, how many of those actually watch football? So that's first of all, because if you don't like Patrick said earlier with the Bill Maher situation, if you already don't watch football, you not watching football not gonna hurt football. But the NFL, the way the NFL grows though, if 10,000 black people boycott the NFL, like they will make that up in middle school viewers. So, what's the effect of, like, if we do boycott, and, well, first of all, is a boycott warranted? And two, if we boycott, will it be effective? And what's the most effective means that should be taken to let the NFL know that stuff like this is unacceptable and we will not further tolerate racism? And people need to stop acting like they didn't already know that these owners were racist, you know. But go ahead.
Well, I think there are two aspects to him not getting a job. One is not, you know what I'm saying? One is obviously, are you good enough to have a job? The other one is, are you good enough to have a job and good enough for us to deal with all of the media attention and press that you're going to bring with you? And that's the other component. So Cap might be good enough to have a job, but obviously a lot of people are saying that he is not good enough for us to deal with all of the extra press. Good or bad?
If they say that, they'll be lying, because they've taken on like the Tim Tebow frenzy.
Yeah, but Tim Tebow, but now we're talking about two separate types of press.
Well, if their main thing is a distraction, then they've taken on, a lot of these teams have taken on bigger distractions.
I'm not saying distraction. Like, you're being kind. I'm not saying that I didn't identify what type of press whatsoever, but we do have to acknowledge that teams have to be, you know what I'm saying? Teams are, they don't have to be, but they are very sensitive to what a player brings in addition to their football skills.
I feel you, but I say this because I take the NFL full of shit, because the NFL appears to be that way, but they will, like, the dude Josh Brown, the kicker for the Giants, like, he was found out he was beating his wife and all these things here, and they punished him by suspending him a little bit, but then gave him a contract extension. Like, but players. Like, Dante Stallworth killed people.
But see, what I'm saying is not in defense of the NFL. It's just a real statement about, in my opinion, how the league works when it comes to player negotiations and contracts. It's not a defense whatsoever, because we have to acknowledge and understand that the league views certain types of press as different than other types of press. A black person killing people, beating people up, blah, 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 as long as it don't, you know, outrage a bunch of white women, it's cool. a black person standing up and taking a stand for issues about black people, particularly taking a stand that upsets white people, that's a different kind of press. And obviously they are saying, we don't want to, or the teams, not the NFL, because that's another thing. The teams are saying, we don't want to deal with that added pressure. Because you got to remember, just like there is a movement of black people and some liberal whites that are supporting Cap, there is also a very powerful alt-right movement that is against Cap. And there is also the very powerful apathy of those neutral whites who don't think they are racist but still participate in racism, that are tired of seeing the black power fist. They're tired of seeing the millionaire black players protesting. And we can feel how we feel about it, but if you read a lot of these outright news sources, they have articles talking about how the NFL ratings are going down because white people are tired of looking at the black all of the pro-black stances and protests being shown by the players. So if we're dealing with a situation like this, and that's not in defense of the league, that's actually in condemnation of the league, however it may sound as I say it, I'm not meaning to say it as a defense for the league. I'm meaning to say it as this is the way the league works. From my understanding, the shit ain't right because it ain't right, but that is, in fact, the way the league works from my understanding. But also from that point of view, is it possible? Let's look at it this way. If black people, remember when Chick-fil-A got boycotted by the homosexuals?
And then they had the Christians lines all out in the streets.
Right,
and
yeah. Right. And they didn't even feel it.
Right.
If the alt-right and the racist conservative white people, and I'm telling you, like, go read some of their websites, some of their news articles, especially their sports sections. They have been very heavily attacking sports networks and franchises and organizations for a long time because of the freedom and because of the protests that black players have been going through all across the sports spectrum, the NBA and the NFL. Now, if black people organize a boycott against these leagues, what do you think those white conservatives, racists, are going to do? And I don't say that to say we should use our movements or let our movements be dictated by their movements. But for a boycott to work and be successful, you have to be able to significantly impact an organization. If somebody can come along and counteract your activity as easily, I mean, the NFL is some like 200 million viewers or something like that.
I don't know about 200 million, but they get good numbers.
Well, I'm not saying every game gets 200 million, but throughout the course of a season, 200 million people will have watched at least one football game. So if 2 million black people don't watch, what, they at 198 million
but,
now?
But, like it's, well, let me say this. I feel what you're saying, but I don't agree that the NFL is afraid of the press, because the NFL is in bed with the press. I think the NFL is the owners, because really the NFL is the owners. Roger Goodell worked for the owners of the team. So the owners of the teams don't like a black player standing up against, because I think it's more so along the line that, like, this nigga think he uppity. So I think it's more so of that than the press, because they more so can manipulate the press to say what it needs to say.
This is why I say what I said. Because if Colin Kaepernick was really beast mode, they wouldn't care. They would sign him anyway. Now, I'm not saying he wouldn't have a more difficult situation than he should have, but I am saying, you look at Marshawn Lynch. As much as the press hated his guts, the man had a job because he was one of the best running backs in the league.
I will say this because of Marshawn Lynch's age and the position, because Colin Kaepernick can start on half of the team. He can start for half the teams in the league right now. And because of the only thing that kind of skewed that one a bit is Marshawn Lynch's, because this may be only be three teams who would sign Marshawn versus if Cap didn't have this over looming over his head, and him and Marshawn was on the even keel, Marshawn would still only have maybe three teams that were interested in him, and Cap would have maybe 10 to 15 teams that would be interested in him as a starter and or backup. And if you do it just, I mean, as a starter, if you do starter and or backup, that can open up to about 20, 25 teams. But just from seeing what I've seen with the NFL, because the NFL is full of shit. And so the NFL is good at putting smoke screens up and looking at and being perceived and putting itself out as one way, and then they coming at you a whole nother way. You can't trust what the NFL say, basically. You know, when you get down, because the way they put it out is, well, we won't be able to handle the negative press and all these. And we know when it get deeper than that, it's about this black person took a stand and these white folk don't like it, and they have the ability to do something about it. With social media, of course, you're gonna have some black, you maybe black Twitter, but the black Twitter is a fly in the NFL's world. So. But even though, like, even if you do have black people that protest, like, I honestly don't think there will be enough black people who give a damn enough to protest, to be honest.
Well, for me, I don't believe in protesting white institutions, because black people are not, in the vast majority of cases, black people are not a significant part of the economy. Of that system to have any real impact. So I don't, you know what I'm saying? I don't agree with boycotting white institutions. In my opinion, if black people as a collective have a problem with a white institution, we leave that institution and we build our own. That's my philosophy.
That's what we should be doing.
And that's my philosophy on everything from corner stores to clothing stores to jewelry stores to fast food restaurants. To even organizations like the NAACP or
NCAA.
Although we probably should lead them too. The NCAA and the fucking NFL and the NBA. You know what I'm saying? Like, we don't get mad at them and say, we not going to watch your stuff until you fix it. You know what I'm saying? We just say, fuck you. Because they didn't have enough time to fix it.
We're not in a good enough position to tell the NFL that if you don't sign Kaepernick, a handful of us won't watch your football game. I mean, because let's just be real, let one of those people who talking about boycotting the NFL, let one of their family members, their close family members, join the NFL. Would their mind change? I mean,
you already know that from, and that's exactly what I was saying about we're not a big enough part of their economy.
Right.
But you already know that I know personal examples of black people that were very much against PWIs and blah 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 blah, all the way up until their kid got accepted to one.
And then they wearing the shirts and all.
Then they got excuses. They wearing the hats and they got this blah blah. Like, so you already know.
Because you're supposed to ride that shit to the grave, and every time your child come home, you're supposed to let their ass have it.
But if you really felt how you felt, you would have raised your kid to put more value in HBCUs than PWIs anyway. But, you know, that's a whole separate discussion. But even yet and still, you know what I'm saying? You already know that if one of these people, if Boyce Watkins had a cousin that was getting ready to catch a 30 or $40 million contract with the NFL, would he tell his cousin not to sign, knowing that 30 or $40 million, could some of that could be redirected into him and his finances and some of the programs and things he got going on? So, you know, like for me, And then again, we go back to, this can't just be about one person. Like, the NFL has a culture. It's a system of disrespecting and hurting the community.
But you and I were talking yesterday, and you said this. We knew this was coming, though. We knew that this locking out, this blackballing of Kaepernick Finnett was coming, and nobody prepared for it.
Right, because we talked. Because in one of the private conversations we had, like when he first started the boycott with Professor Carl Tone Jones, who's on the show frequently enough, we said, you know, it was said then, if black people really want to take care of Cap, they need to get a job ready for him for when he's no longer in the league, because it's probably going to be soon. Like, that was said in that conversation when he first started the boycott. That was before he even softened his stance.
But also, let's really totally analyze everything that came out of this, because what was Colin Kaepernick doing in the community before the boycott? Because, and the reason why I asked that, well, before he started, he decided to take a seat, then take a knee. And the reason why I asked that, because from my understanding, from what I've been looking out of, he's held true to his promise of donating and working in the community. But if that was the outcome of this, then you wasted our damn time, because you should have been doing that in the first place. Or am I wrong?
Well, you know, people are going to say everybody comes into their consciousness at their own pace and their own time. I do agree with you. With as many of those NFL players that are black, we should have a lot more coming back from our community members going into the NFL than a whole bunch of goddamn football camps.
But see, even in that, when somebody talking about people coming to their own at their own time, I mean, I get that, but most of these players come from poverty. Most of these players come from poverty. So you can't tell me that they don't understand the reality of the conditions and things that they're in, and why, and the importance of making things better. So they know that. Now, the time when it comes for them to give a damn, I mean, I understand that, but they know what's going on.
Yeah, but their idea of giving back is to sponsor a football camp so that more people, more black kids, even though they should know the odds, because they should understand how many people they play football with over their years of playing football, and the fact that they are probably the only one that they know that actually made it to the league. Despite all of those things, though, their idea of giving back is to sponsor a football camp. You know what I'm saying? And that's the part where we got to, you know, and to that, I'm not critical of the NFL players. I think in their minds, sponsoring a football camp is honestly a great thing. I mean, look at what football did for me. But just think, as a community, we have to go to all of these people that have resources and tell them, look, we don't need another football camp. We got 6 of them already. What we need is this. Can you help fund this?
Well, I will say this. If your football camp is leading to something more than just football, but also helping raising money for kids in the community and all other stuff like that, then your camp is a viable camp. But a lot of things that people do in the community, I think, could be done. I hate the Toys for Tots for Christmas. As a child who around Christmas time, because when I was in 8th grade in 98, our house burnt down. So we had nothing. Like, I ran out of the house with a cast on my arm, a shirt, and some drawers. And that's literally all I had to my name. And so when Christmas come around, I don't want no fucking toys. I want food and clothes. I want lights. I want real things. I don't want no damn toys. Like, I can't eat toys when I'm hungry at night. I can't eat toys. When I walk outside and it's cold as hell because it's wintertime, I don't want toys. And I'm not knocking Toys for Tots, but I'm just saying, like, I just think some of these things could be thought out a little better. I mean, you don't, like, a toy is the last thing a child who's in real need. Like, that's the last thing that child needs is a toy. I mean, I get the symbology and all that. You want them to escape, but I can't escape this shit. This toy not going to help me escape this shit. This is reality. And guess what? I got this toy in my hand, but I'm still hungry.
But see, you know, you think about what a lot of those people who start programs do, right? And it's the same with the football players and their football camps. They think about what certain things did for them, and they make the assumption that it will do that for other people. Like, it's very rare that I've talked to anybody personally, and this is even when I was doing my nonprofit consultations, it was always very rare that I talked to somebody that had actually thought about how what they were doing would affect the people they were trying to affect from their perspective. It's almost always, well, I remember growing up, I loved getting toys for Christmas, so
it's not
I
want to
give
you.
Other people, right, it's not about you, because it was the same with me growing up. We were poor, most Christmases, we were simply too poor to have toys, but I didn't want toys. Like, toys were not significant to me like that. Like, you know, like, if I really wanted something to play with, I could go outside and play with a stick. You know, like, that was toy enough for me. I was more interested in other things, real things. You know, when I'm hungry, I want to be able to have more in my kitchen than flour and tap water. You know what I'm saying? Like, so I get what you're saying, and I agree with it. But on the other end, again, we need a community that's more vocal about what it needs. Just like we need them to stop telling these players, we don't need 6 football camps. We don't need 18 football camps. We need to tell Toys for Tots, look, our impoverished communities don't need fucking toys. If the kids want to play, they can play with each other. We need fucking food and clean water, bills paid, lights, heat. Give me a heater for Christmas.
Yeah, because they could really use that money that they're collecting for them toys instead of having people buy toys and, like, donate $20 so people can get their light bill paid, so people can get help with their rent and stuff like that.
But, you know, people don't think like that. And even going back to Cap, I'm not going to disrespect none of the work he did or his consciousness. I do agree with you. All of those football players, Cap included, should be more active in their communities in more ways than they are. I will say that. But I can say that from my perspective, being who I am and knowing what I know, a lot of them, they know the system is fucked up. They know the system is rigged against them. But they don't really, and let's just be honest, and if any football players hear this and get offended, it is what it is. They really, from their actions, you see, they really don't have enough information to come up with a real solution. They just don't know. That's like the two football, I forget their names, who said they were going to advocate for black people on Capitol Hill. They were going to lobby for black people on Capitol Hill. So what they decided to do was go up to the congressional building and talk to lawmakers and see what was on the table and what was possible and what wasn't possible. And in their minds, that was a good idea with the information they had. Now, you and I, with the information we have, we can rip that idea to shreds and come up with a million other things that they could do that would be so much more beneficial to the community than sitting up there asking a bunch of Congress people what is possible and what isn't possible and blah, 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 because we understand that as a community, you make your own goddamn possibilities. You don't allow an outsider to dictate to you what's possible for your people. So we go up there, we would send them up there with laws already written up, with, you know what I'm saying, with plans of action already drawn up. And we don't take them up there, we don't tell them to go up there just to ask, well, what is this possible? No, you go up there and you demand that this happens. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's very powerless. That's very weak to be like, hey, okay, well, what can we do to help our community? Like, you got money. You got access to resources. Use it. Like, you have people who don't have a quarter of the things that you all have for making way more significant things. Now, like I said earlier, Kaepernick, if the most that came out of what he was doing, especially from him, was that he started getting active in the community, you should have been doing that. Like you should have been doing that. I'm not gonna knock you for that, but that's something that you should have been. But what's the greater outcome of him taking sitting down and taking a knee? Like, what's the greater outcome now for black people? Because Shannon Sharp made a comment that 20, 30 years from now it's gonna be significant in black history. But my question is, well, when he said that, I start thinking, well, why? Like, why is Kaepernick taking his knee going to be so significant 20, 30 years from now? Like, what's the immediate outcome? What's the short-term outcome? What's the long-term outcome of him doing this? Is it just symbolic, or is there some kind of real change, some kind of real outcome that comes from him doing what he did? Because going back, like, what was the real outcome of the guys doing the Black Power Fist at the 68 Olympics? Like, what was the real outcome that helped improve things for black people?
Well, and that's where we get into the discussion of moral victories and symbolic gestures, which is an area that we love to be in for some reason. You know, we remember those symbolic gestures and those moral victories because we don't have any real victories to really latch on to, and that's partly because we spend so much time glorifying the symbology and not enough time really celebrating those people that are really trying to make things happen, those people that are really out there in the community gaining real victories. They might be small, but at least they're real, they're meaningful, they have an impact on the communities they affect. The outcome of Colin Kaepernick's knee, I wouldn't even put it on the level of the 68 Olympics. It wasn't on that scope. The 68 Olympics, first off, the Olympics is bigger than any game in the regular season. Let's just be real. Now, we could argue back and forth about what's bigger, the Olympics or the Super Bowl. That's a decent debate. But the Olympics is bigger.
Olympics bigger than the Super Bowl. This is a worldwide event more so than the Super Bowl. And I get what you're saying.
But that's the significance of the 68 Olympics. It's not the Black Power Fist in and of itself. It's the entire atmosphere surrounding it, a global event where people from all over the world are looking at these two people, really these three people, because the Australian that came in second, he was a part of the protest as well. So they're looking at these three people, and they see this moment. That impact, morally anyways, carries weight, global weight. And in some ways, you can't argue that it created a lot of international pressure for the United States to at least better hide its injustices towards black people, which the United States did. They got very good. The 60s made the United States very good at hiding oppression. Colin Kaepernick's taking the knee doesn't fall anywhere close to that realm. And again, I bring back up Marshawn Lynch. Why is he not the hero of the NFL right now? Why is he not, you know, why are we spending so much time focused on Colin Kaepernick and his symbology and not focused on those NFL players
who've been doing it, who didn't have to make a public grant. And, you know, it's nothing wrong with what Cap did, but it's players who've been putting in work. Like, we even criticized Jim Brown for his meeting with Trump, but Jim Brown been putting in work in the community for years. Hell, even Steve Harvey been putting in work for the community as far as to make things better for some groups of people. And we might not agree with all the tactics that they've been doing, but hell, nobody had to, like, nothing like this had to happen. So, I mean, you have to give credit to where credit's due, and that's what you were saying. And that's what we don't do. We shine spotlights on things that the media validates and things, but
right.
Like you said, Marshawn Lynch been doing this. Like, you got players who been doing things in the community since they were in college.
Yeah, because it ain't just Marshawn Lynch either. There are a number of players in the league who have been stepping up for the community and putting their money where their mouth is, but you never hear about them because they don't take a public stance. They don't. It's not necessary. Look. You in the NFL, and this is where I get into strategies and tactics. I'm in a privileged position to be making millions of dollars to play games. It is not my job at that point to be a spokesperson for the community. It is my job when it comes to my culture and my people to make money and send that money back to the community. That's my purpose. So I don't have no beef with those players who keep their mouth closed, earn their money, and send their money back to the community. I got all the respect in the world for them. Matter of fact, I have more respect for those players than I have for the mouthpieces. And but that's what we have to groom our people to be more strategic. Our children need to be taught to be more strategic. Okay, if you got to venture out into the white world, get as much from there as you can and send that shit back home. Just like the goddamn Mexicans do when they come over and they get a job, everybody make a joke about them willing to work anywhere and them piled up living in these situations and how many of them you see in a car. Everybody make a joke out of that shit. I have mad respect for them because every single thing they get, they send it back home or they using it to make improvements for their own people. Why is that funny? We need to be doing the exact same thing.
Hey. We got to get there. That's why we're going to keep having these conversations, having these discussions, and really, really, really thinking about this stuff and digging deep. I mean, like, we could be too surface level about things. Like, we can't be getting all extra mad about certain things that don't really affect us, and we can't be getting all behind things, and we don't know all the full scope of having thought anything out. And if we're going to be behind people, let's be behind them for real. Like you're saying, if we're going to try to affect the NFL, first of all, we need the players and the coaches help that's in the NFL because they have the most power.
Mm-hmm.
Because I just, and unless every black person that watch enough the NFL get together and agree to not watch, if that happens, then yes, we got some power now. But I just don't think we'll get enough black people to be able to even make a dent. Like, how many, like, because the NFL gains so many new viewers a year, it's like, they get a whole new school of middle school viewers.
I don't even agree with that. Go ahead, though.
Because, I mean, it's like, I just don't know what would be the best strategy outside of collectively the players, coaches, and the public getting together to make the NFL feel it. I don't know.
I mean, to go back to the NFL situation, one, I already said I'm against taking any sort of major action for one player. If you're not going to address the systemic issues, the larger issues that have affected other players, then you're disrespecting those other players that went through those situations. You're disrespecting those players that continue to go through those situations. And you're disrespecting those players who are actually out there fighting, doing real things in the community to make a difference. So, I'm not going to jump on this boycott the NFL bandwagon specifically because Cap is being blackballed. That's not enough for me. Now, that being said, I don't watch the NFL. I don't watch football anyways. So it's not really a, you know what I'm saying, one way or another, there's no slack off my back. But two, I don't think that there are enough black people watching the NFL to affect the NFL. Look, if 75%, and these are the numbers I looked up, 75%, more than 75% of men and more than 55% of women nationally watch at least one NFL game a year, right? So if that's true, you're talking about the third largest population group in America, because Hispanics outnumber us and white people outnumber us. There are too many other people watching the NFL for black viewers alone, in my opinion, to have an impact, even if you got every last single black viewer to stop watching. And that's just the United States. We got to remember, there are people in other countries now watching the NFL as well. Canada. People in Canada are watching the NFL. You got certain people in South America that might be watching the NFL. People in Europe that might be watching the NFL.
That's my thing. Like, okay, you can have this, but that's going to get made up in new viewers.
Right. So it's not enough black people watching the NFL. Now, like you said, if the players and coaches choose to boycott, we can support them. But as a community, we have to determine how are we going to support them. I mean, these are the 100,000-aires and millionaires. These are the upper class of the black community. So outside of moral support, good job, we love you, we appreciate you, what else can we really do? This is a situation in terms of Colin Kaepernick that we as a community have to be real about. Right now, in this current moment, it is outside of our capabilities to really do anything about this situation.
Yeah,
we can't really do
anything. Other than give his ass a job.
Right. And he's been making all the money he's been making over the years. I would hope that he got enough stash that he don't need a job.
Right.
But there really is nothing we can do. Now you got to look forward and be proactive. What can we do so that in the future we're not completely powerless? That's the question that needs to be asked. Only thing I can think of is make your own lead.
Hey, if you're not going to make your own lead, you got to start complaining.
You can't get mad at white people for getting mad at you for not following their rules and their systems.
Right.
If a white person comes into the black community, we expect that white person to act accordingly. And it's the same the other way around. When you go into a white organization, they expect you to act accordingly. If you don't,
they get rid of your ass.
Exactly. I don't understand what's so complicated about it. But no, I'm not in support of boycotting. I'm not in support of boycotting a white institution, period. I already said that. White institutions, you don't boycott, you abandon.
Right.
But I'm definitely not in support of doing anything that really only supports one person. Even if the boycott is successful, what comes out of it? Colin Kaepernick gets a job. That's it? That's it. We mobilizing millions of people so that one person can get a job?
Yeah.
Meanwhile,
who has enough money to create his own job?
Right. Meanwhile, we ignore the millions of people who need to mobilize millions of people so that they can be taken care of the way they need to be taken care of. And beyond that, to another point, why would we want Colin Kaepernick at this point to play in a league that doesn't want him there? The NFL is a league where you're allowed to punish people physically. And we're demanding that he be there even though they don't want him there?
Well, we have a history of fighting to get into institutions that don't want us, and we need to stop that. So,
I don't know, brother. Nothing about boycotting the NFL in this situation makes sense. Now, you ask me, we needed to create our own league a long time ago, and that's where I'm gonna stand. But I'm not fixing the boy. I was against making Mike Brown all about Mike Brown. I was against making Trayvon Martin all about Trayvon Martin. I was against making Jordan and Crawford and all of those guys and girls that have been put in the media spotlight for getting murdered or mistreated. I'm always against doing anything specifically for one person. It has to be about larger systemic issues in order for us to make real change. And the problem is we keep getting caught up in these movements about one person. And then what ends up happening is that person gets defamed or destroyed or whatever the case might be, or you forget about it because you're really not attached to it because it's not really about you, it's about one person, and nothing happens. When we start making these movements about collective systemic issues that affect all of us, I think we'll see a lot more traction. I'm not going to advocate for boycotting anything for a rich black person.
Right.
And that can sound however it's going to sound. I think we should have been created our own league. That way when Colin Kaepernick get what we knew was coming, we could just give him a job in our league. All right, Cap, you could come play quarterback for the, like you said, Joe, the Arizona Negroes.
Hey, man. Hey, all I know is we could be doing things better if we're gonna put all our energy out there and get behind something, get behind movements, get behind all these things here. Huh, do we? Get behind things that's gonna make a real
show too long.
Get behind things that can make a real difference. I mean, we can't just be reactive. And yeah, you hear people like Boyce Watkins and other people saying that they're gonna boycott NFL. Me personally, I disagree. I think we could do better things with our time to kind of make a better statement. If we're really trying to make the NFL feel us, start your own league, like. Start encouraging young black parents and young black kids to stop letting stop sending their kids to white schools, and then in the meantime we build our own league.
Yeah, I mean, a boycott at this point to affect the organization like the NFL, it can't come from black viewers. It has to come from black players. Period.
Right.
There's not even enough black coaches.
But looking at what's happening with Cap, how many black players are willing to go through that?
Well, I mean, let's be honest. How many black people or black players? Well, I mean, you saw more black players taking stances, especially after his was publicized. But how many black players throughout league history have even done that? And that's not to discredit any of them, because we do know there have been a number of black players who have taken stances in various sports way before Cap even did it that largely got ignored. And part of the interest for me is trying to understand why Cap's situation even blew up the way it did. Because we have seen other players throughout history that have taken stances that have not stood for the anthem, that of this, that, and the third. Matter of fact, back in the day, it was regular not to stand for the anthem. It wasn't even required.
They just started doing that after 9/11. So
it was like, there have been other players that have made public stances and made public statements that have not received this level of attention. So it's one of those where you're just like, you know, well, was it just raw luck or you know, like, what happened that made this so significant? And that's something that I'm still looking into. I got theories, but at the end of the day, I'm not going to call for black people. And the reason why I say that is that you have to be strategic about when you make your calls to action. People are only going to be riled up, revved up, and you know what I'm saying? People are only going to be golden in the movement so many times before they get started, tired of moving. And the amount of energy that's expended trying to get people riled up to do something should be respected, not just on the part of those doing the riling, but on those on the part of those that are getting riled. You got to make sure that when you choose to put out a call to action, especially something that might be as life-changing for some people as no longer watching a sports event that they've been watching every chance they get all their lives, you want to make sure that that's really going to have an impact. You don't want people just doing stuff just for the sake of doing it. You would rather save that energy and have that energy be there for you for when you want to do something more significant. And that's that's why I say I wouldn't support a boycott, because organizing a boycott is a serious thing. It takes a lot of time, a lot of energy, a lot of commitment from everybody involved. Ain't nobody just say, okay, we're going to boycott the buses in Montgomery. Nah, they had to plan that out. And they did it for over a year. Imagine all of the inconveniences that people had to accept and deal with. Now, that might be on a separate scale than simply not watching a sports event, but that's where we get into psychology. And we get into behaviorisms, and we get into all of these other things that go into why a person watches football and why they love to watch football. You know what I'm saying? So I just wanted to explain, from my perspective anyways, why we should be careful about any calls to action that we make. Because if you make a call to action every time something happens, eventually, even your own people are going to stop listening to you.
Yep. And you're going to be expected to do something real, and if you ain't doing nothing real, that's what's going to happen.
And you start losing credibility and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, it's a whole nother show on about how everybody trying to be the next MLK, so.
Yeah, you know, everybody's had their dream, and now they got to publicize it, so. Hey, man. Once again, want to let y'all know, September 4th, 2017, I'll be releasing my second book, On the Shoulders of Giants, Volume 2, Central America. Make sure you can visit, if you want to learn more about it, visit both my websites. Visit www.ontheshoulders1.com. That's my blog site where I have my daily or my weekly historical profiles, and I have information about my book on www.ontheshoulders1.com. You can also visit www.ontheshoulders.org to learn more about the book. Follow me on Twitter at ontheshoulders1, Instagram at ontheshoulders1, like my On the Shoulders of Giants Facebook page. And you know, you could be down with what's going on with On the Shoulders of Giants. Like I said, once again, on Twitter, On the Shoulders One, Instagram at On the Shoulders One. Make it easy for you to find me, so that way you can learn more about the book. Pat, what you got coming up, man?
I got a bunch of stuff, but I ain't got no dates yet. So
he got a bunch of stuff, but he ain't got no dates. Also, hold on, because February 22nd through 25th of 2018. The National Association for the Preservation of African American History and Culture, Incorporated, is holding the National Conference on African American History and Culture in Tallahassee, Florida, February 22nd through the 25th. It's a national conference, so we're going to be highlighting a lot of important things within the black community. We're going to have a forum on the state of the black male, a forum on the state of the black female, a forum on the state of the black family. And they're all solution-based and about healing and bringing our community closer, but it's more focused on solution and using our resources and our skills and our talents to make our community better. So it's going to be all structured around us moving forward the way we need to move. So, and as the conference gets closer, we make sure we give you more information. So with that being said, I'm Joseph Ward. He's Patrick Urban. This is the Freedom Train. And I guess we'll see y'all good people next time then, huh? Peace.